Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
This is Best of the Mass, the podcast that's all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. And I'm flying all over town today. I've got so many meetings, but I love starting my day one way, and that is with the clarifying polish from Pour Moi. I do this every morning, Elizabeth, and it feels so good. It's an exfoliant, but it's a very light one. It's a very gentle one. And so I do that before I do the rest of my Pour Moi system. Pour Moi. It's affordable luxury skincare from France, proven for anti-aging results. It's climate smart skincare. That's the big difference. Use the code NEST. It's a new code, N-E-S-T, for an extra 20% off, just in case you can't spell NEST, with 100% money back guarantee. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I skincare.com. Remember, it's a one-time code, N-E-S-T, NEST, for
so
20% off.
Oh, our presenting sponsor, Best of the Nest. We're so appreciative to them for so many things, but the sponsorship is really terrific. The skincare products are the big thing. They're so good.
It's
my girlfriends in California all just ordered. They all just ordered this weekend.
Fantastic.
Yes, they were texting me. They were like, I'm ready. I'm taking the plunge. I'm doing it. I keep seeing your skin. That's what's happening. Okay, let's talk about the weekend. And I love that you wanted to talk about babysitters today. And it always seems like, Marjorie, because we are so connected in our spirits.
We are connected.
That whenever you send like an article and you're like, oh, I wanted to talk about this, it's so funny that I was just having this conversation. And the conversation is about babysitters. So let's talk about the jumping off point with this Atlantic article.
The Atlantic article is written by Faith Hill, not that Faith Hill, I'm pretty sure, unless she's got a pretty good side gig going. And it's about sort of the death of the American babysitter trend or job, really. And I just want to read, this is what hooked me. So I'll usually read about three or four paragraphs before I'll commit to a whole article. This is the paragraph that hooked me. She wrote, today, the teen babysitter, as we knew her in pop culture and in reality, has all but disappeared. People seem to worry less about adolescents and more for them and for their future prospects. As Fast put it, that's one of her experts, teenagers don't seem very grown up these days. There's not much reason to fear or exalt babysitters anymore because our society no longer trusts teens to babysit much at all. This is huge. Babysitting was everything to me and to my three older sisters. It is how I always had a good roll of ones in my pocket. I don't know how teenagers don't fight to do this anymore. How did you react to that first paragraph?
Well, it's shocking because I, on Friday night, had a teenage babysitter over. I have her coming back on Thursday. And I think what's been so interesting about this is to think about the shift. Like, let's go back to think about the shift from what it was like when we were young. So I will tell you, when I was 11 turning 12, I babysat full time in the summer for a 3-year-old and an 18-month-old. This is not a made up story. I know this family. I've been to lunch with this family within the last decade. They were members of our church. I did a babysitting class when I was 11, which is when I did like the class through the Red Cross or whatever, which I feel like was a total rite of passage for every single one of my girlfriends. We all... Is someone calling you, Marjorie?
Yes, it's my son. Keep going. I just declined my son, which pains my heart to decline my son.
You just have to have a custom greeting that says, I'm in a podcast, and then he'll totally understand.
And there's a way to shut it off, which I didn't. So, but anyway, but we're talking about motherhood, so it's always good.
There's always babies who need something from their mama. Doesn't matter how old they are. But, you know, it was a total rite of passage, and it was essential. Like, it was the first way that I started to earn money. I remember even just going through the expectations with my parents of okay, what it meant to clean up after yourself, what it meant that when you were over at their house, that part of babysitting was like preparing food. Like I was preparing food for these children right. at 11 years old.
This is amazing.
And then
but I
putting
was
them down for a nap, yeah. like doing all of the things. And I continued babysitting and nannying. I mean, I guess we called it nannying when I was in college because I right. think I tried to make it sound more professional so I could negotiate a higher wage, which I think is smart. And it was like absolutely crucial. And then now it's so fascinating. The other thing I remember is like dads driving me home, like
oh, yeah.
all the time. I mean, so I couldn't drive from the time, and those were my prime babysitting years because frankly, once I was 16, I got a job. And so I didn't really babysit as much anymore. So my like 11 to 16 was prime babysitting years when I couldn't drive. And the dads would drive me home all the time. Generally, one parent was drunk who I was babysitting for. And so then Always. The other one who was less drunk would drive me home. I mean, this is the 90s.
Can we talk about the 70s when I was babysitting?
Let's go.
11 to 16, I am pretty confident, and I'm not naming names, that they were both drunk.
Yeah.
And I was being driven home. But maybe not. I say that, and I don't want to disparage people. But for the most part, I lived on a street. I had three older sisters, and all of the kids aged perfectly for our family to be the head babysitting family. So they would start with my sister Tracy, Molly, Jamie, and then if none of them were available, they would made it to me, starting at age 11.
11.
And I would go to people's houses. And the key thing about here is that it is that idea of that first touch of responsibility. And it is responsibility, but it's with all these guardrails. It's with all of these. A lot of times the parents, if I was babysitting, they would already have made dinner. The mother would have already made dinner and have right. it in the refrigerator, pre-prepped. Their pantry would be stocked for me to raid. I mean, it was just, everything was just as it was supposed to be in that transaction. What is amazing, though, is in the summers, I would take the kids. I mean, I was taking these kids to the pool.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think I've told the story on the podcast where I was babysitting two little kids and I wasn't in the pool with them. The little boy opened up his sister's water wings and she started to sink because he thought it was funny. Now I'm like 12. Had I not been attentive, I'm sure there were lifeguards, but I mean, babysitters do have real responsibility. There are real things going on. It's not always that the kids are already in bed, already taken care of, and you're just there to sort of watch the house and make sure nobody runs out of the house. It's real. But the article, I want to say this because you mentioned this, the article says that what's changed is we don't know the people on our street.
Yeah.
And you said, I knew the people, they knew me, they knew my family, they knew my sisters because we all lived on the same street. With you, you knew them from church. The archetypal sitter lived just a few doors down. She was the daughter of your friends. She was the girl you'd been watching grow up for years. But Americans today tend to be less well acquainted with neighbors than they used to be. And they trust other people less in general. If you're not familiar with the high schooler on your block, you might not feel comfortable placing your children in her questionably capable hands. Even more than that, you might never connect in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so that is so fascinating because for a long time we had college age babysitters or older. And, you know, I mean, you guys, if you're listening to the podcast regularly, my kids are 9, 6, and 3. So for a long time we had college age babysitters or older. And that's because my kids for many, many years went to daycare at Concordia University. And
not
at
perfect.
Concordia University, my dad was the president of the university. So the woman who ran the daycare, she was a student worker at the daycare when I was at the daycare when I was a kid for like
oh my gosh.
Because my mom substitute taught there. So there was it was like so ingrained in the community. And then the student workers in the daycare at Hand in Hand in Concordia, which is actually it's a really great daycare. If you're in the metro and you're looking, I recommend it. But it was really wonderful because we felt like we had that connection. It was sort of like a church community because
right.
the student workers in the daycare would get to know our kids. And then they knew them because they worked like in the infant room. So I felt really comfortable because they had training in an infant room to come over to our house and we would hire them in the evenings. One of them, Molly, I mean, Molly's like 27 and she still babysits for us. Like we right. love her and she has babysat for our kids since Bernie was about 6 months old. So those types of relationships are so significant. But as they've gotten older, I've realized, I mean, frankly, the cost of a college age or older babysitter is so significant compared to a high school babysitter.
What does it cost?
Well, it's between like $20 and $25 an hour. My post-college babysitters ask for $25. My nanny was 23 and she was pretty reasonable.
But a babysitter just to show up on a Friday night is $25 an hour?
Okay. Well, this is why I was like, we have to stop doing this. Like, this is insane. And all of our friends talk about this because you can have great jobs. You can also outspend any great job. So you can't like, you know, when you're like, hey, Jay, let's go for a date night. And we know that dinner out is going to be at least $100 and the babysitter is going to be $100. I mean, that's $200.
That's impossible.
Plus, it's like
for
if you order a pizza for the kids, I mean, that's insane.
It's impossible for most
impossible.
People.
Impossible. And it does make you think like, I hate to say this, but you do have to balance of like, is that time with my husband worth it? Is this,
right.
Are these people that we're going out with worth it? Like,
right.
It makes it feel so much more like a business transaction. So anyway, we have now that our kids are getting a little bit older and they're not as labor intensive and it's not like you're caring for a baby that everybody's potty trained, you know, everyone can kind of like speak and do their own thing. We have some really great high school babysitters and that has been really helpful. And I also think it's nice because like the high school babysitters, and I remember this from being young, like they're a little bit more into playing with the kids. They just are like, they're just like at that age where they kind of look back and think it's so cute. Like our high school babysitters will show up with like a little bag that I used to have of like babysitter treats,
right?
New toys, fresh toys, like some colors, like ideas of things to do with the kids. And then our high school babysitters are $15 an hour. And this is going to depend on the area that you are. I mean, we live smack dab in the city of Minneapolis. Most of our high school babysitters are very timid about what they will charge. Like some of them will even say, oh, I just do this for fun. You don't need to pay me. To which I, as a working woman say
absolutely
not. Oh, hills no. Like we are paying you and this domestic labor is worth something. And we are 100% paying you. And most of them have asked for significantly less than that. But I feel like 15 an hour is the lowest that I'll do.
What do they ask for? In their mind,
like
what are they?
$10.
$10. Which is still mind-boggling to me, quite frankly.
How much that is?
But I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I was getting $4 an hour in 1978.
Yeah, so I made 12 inflation-wise, it's probably full-time. Yeah, $12 an hour full-time was when I nannied for summers in college. And that was 20 years ago. So I kind of feel like
That's about
15 for them is okay. And, you know, frankly, we want them to want to come. And it feels like a real bargain compared to our other sitters. But they, but it is, you know, getting, if you don't know the people on your street, it's really tricky. Like our high school babysitters are, one is the daughter of someone that we know from our golf club. So that's been really fortunate for us. That's like that community built in. One, our babysitter who came over last weekend, she lives right behind us.
Right.
So we know her moms and her family and all of that. And then one is a babysitter who lived two doors down from us at our old house, which is a mile away. And I knew her and her sister from when they moved into our old house, she was four and we didn't have kids. And the little girls would come out and like plant things with me. And so I've known them that long.
And I think that's the comfort level, but according to this piece is very few people have that comfort level anymore. And it's, you know, we look at it from the perspective of we've done both. We were both mothers with young children and we were both babysitters. The point of the piece is really about what's being lost for these teenagers, what they lose by not doing it. And it was really interesting that a lot of the article makes the point that babysitting is being dismissed as a non-useful job,
which non-use, so is motherhood.
Well, interesting. It's being dismissed in that way that kids who can afford to or who come from, they say this sort of crosses all classes. She does make the point to say this crosses all classes, that parents look at their teenagers and coddle them in the way that they feel like they should be having experiences that are helping them learn and grow and have things to put on their resumes, which is so awful, honestly, to me. I look at that and I just think, do we really have to be resume building at 14, at 12? But the other problem is, too, is Illinois. I have to go back and look this up exactly. In Illinois, I think it said, because this is going to shock you, the law is, here it is, I'll read this exactly. As Fast pointed out, it didn't used to be unusual for 12-year-olds to babysit. Now more than two-thirds of American parents think kids should be 12 or older before they can even be left home alone. Several states have guidelines issuing a similar age limit. In Illinois, kids legally can't be left attended until they are 14.
They can't be left unattended until they're 14 years old in Illinois?
In Illinois. Is that a reason not to move to Illinois?
That is crazy train. Really?
This is what? This is from the Atlantic.
Fascinating. You know, you bring up, as you're talking about this, it's bringing up such an interesting thought for me, which is that, you know, not only are we deciding if we're okay having these children in our homes babysitting our children, but it's the parents of the babysitters that are deciding whether or not they want their kids in someone else's home. And you know what? As now I have a 9-year-old daughter who I would love for her to babysit. And she already asks, when will I get to babysit? When would I be able to babysit?
Next year, honey.
I think about that too, though. Like I'm thinking she's going to be in this house. All the things that I don't let Bernie do that I got to do as a child. It's very troubling to me. But this is the life that I'm living. Like Bernie wanted to have a sleepover. Her friends were having a sleepover at a birthday party. We're not doing sleepovers. Like we're just not doing them. And so that's the point that we're at. That's where we're at this point. And I don't like judge any other parents for what they're doing. I was shocked that so many other parents were okay with that. And I thought, maybe these people didn't work in TV news for so long and hear all these horror stories. So maybe they are not so sick and jaded as me. And that could be the case. But like,
I was with you.
See, I didn't like these, like the idea of Jay and my husband, let me be very clear, is in no way any sort of predator. But the idea of Jay driving a babysitter home is beyond laughable. There is no way that that would ever happen because we would never put him in a situation with a girl. We would just never do that to a young girl of have her be like in a car. Even people that like we know really well, the only times that that has happened where he's picked up, he would pick up one of our babysitters on occasion because he had the kids in the car. He'd get them from school and then he'd pick up Margot and then swing home and meet me. And then we would go out.
Even this to me is I too am a bit jaded because of all the stories, but statistically the stories we hear, they're all still statistically rare, but it doesn't matter. It happened to one child. It happened to 10, however many children it happened. And so if you're aware of those stories, it still makes you pause a bit. But even in saying that, you wouldn't have a husband drive a babysitter home. We'll just take it out of making it personal. You wouldn't have your husband drive a babysitter home. There's even a sadness to that in me because that was a part of growing up for me. I was a very shy child. That was a part of my socialization of having to sit in the front seat with somebody I didn't know. The father was trying to make conversation. I had to make conversation back. It was a growing up moment, feeling awkward, feeling uncomfortable. Nothing bad obviously ever happened to me, but and the same thing is true of sleepovers. There are horror stories.
Yeah.
Mostly for me is I just didn't want my kids coming home really tired and cranky. And then the other thing is I knew what we did in sleepovers starting in fifth grade. We were running all over the city. We would leave the house at 2 o'clock in the morning. There'd be a boy sleepover somewhere else. They'd all break out of that house.
Classic.
Nothing bad was happening, but we were running down alleys at 3 o'clock in the morning.
We did the same. It was great. Yeah. We'd strategize. The girls would sleep at Tanya's house and the boys would sleep at Micah's house. And they lived right near each other. And then we would all, everybody had these split level houses with lower level windows that were built in the 80s that were sneaking out houses.
Yeah.
And so then they would come over. I mean, it was a whole thing.
And part of when I look at that and I think back at that, those were such really happy memories for me because it was that first feeling of like, of breaking a rule, but it was sort of harmless. Nothing ever happened to any of us. But also, again, it's a growing up moment. And I think, you know, when we talk about these kids and the generations that have these extended adolescents, as parents, we're culpable. And I you know, we are culpable for protecting them in a way that keeps them from the kind of growth that I think we were able to have. Now, I'm not saying it's harming them permanently. I'm not saying, but it is having an effect. And I do think as a parent, you have to seek out those experiences that can help them push into the world, even though it's uncomfortable. And I think babysitting was one of those. I think that was one of the best ways to do it.
I totally think so. And it is, there's so many amazing, valuable lessons from it. I mean, the list can go on and on of just even understanding how someone else runs a household, of, you know, being compensated for daily tasks and getting that first understanding of like, what does this look like to run a house and to keep it clean and to keep things organized and to have to care for children? I mean, we haven't even gotten into the idea of having a boy babysitter. I have a couple of friends who have had boy babysitters.
Right.
And that's a whole nother arena of like, even when I was growing up, there were none of the boys were babysitting. Now it's still very, very few.
Yeah. And I don't know one that was a babysitter.
Yeah. That's always interesting too, because then it just, by default, the domestic labor is falling on females, whether it's compensated or uncompensated. But
right. It's the expectation.
Yeah. But I think learning all those things and like kind of figuring out a family dynamic and all of that stuff was really pivotal to me and really important to me. And then I had really great relationships with the families I babysat for. And I remember thinking like, boy, why do they like me so much? And then now I realize like, it's because it's really great when you have like a teenage babysitter who comes over and they bring like a fun delight to our house. Like our babysitter, Margo, who's now in college, she babysits for us. And sometimes I'd have her do after school pickup and I'd get home and start making dinner and she'd be just hanging out chatting. And I'm like, do you want to stay for dinner? And she would stay for dinner. And, you know, we would talk about like things that she had going on in her life or things that she was thinking about with college, or she would ask advice about things. And
it's invaluable.
That is the dynamic too, that you forget. And even, you know, there was a family I babysat for in Madison and they had two little boys, and I still connect to see what the mom is up to on Facebook. And I would stay, and she was a freelance writer. And so she would tell me about what it was like to have young kids and be working and trying to figure out, you know, how much could she work and how much could she not, all that dynamic. And I think all those conversations were really helpful for me. And that goes far beyond just coming over and babysitting the kids. It is that building of a community. And I think that's what you're getting at with the heart of this article, is that if we don't know our neighbors, if we don't have strong connections with our community, we don't trust other people, and then we don't gain things from those relationships.
Right. Right. And that I love that you said that, because we think of, you know, at its core, I always joke about all the $1 bills I had. So it was a transactional relationship, but it really was more than that. And I think that's what you hit on so importantly, because when we talk about babysitting, it's a child having their foot, one foot in the adult world and one foot in a children's world. And how great is that to be able to have a relationship with an adult that isn't a friend of your parents, that isn't an adult that's coming in and saying, oh, you know, how are you? What are your plans?
Because they're younger than your parents.
They're younger than your parents. And also, I love that idea that here's this young woman, whether it was you with the writer or Margot with you, of feeling comfortable and having a conversation with an adult about what's going on in her life. It's one more person in her village. And so if you think about kids who don't babysit or don't even, and they touch on this very briefly about how the idea of an after-school job or a summer job has also gone away.
It's huge. And I think missing out on that is something really big. And, you know, when you were talking about like resume builders, you know, oh, because the parents think that they should be doing something else to put on their resume, like a job should be at the top of the list. And I had jobs all the way through. I worked at a coffee shop. I worked at The Limited. I worked at Bath and Body Works. I had tons of jobs. I met amazing people. I learned so much. And frankly, I did it because I didn't have any money. Like my parents did not have any money to give to me. I needed a car. Money. I needed to go to college. I needed to save money. I also wanted the freedom to be able to buy some things that I would be like what my friends have that I didn't wouldn't have gotten to have because my parents did not have very much money when I was young. Lutheran ministers, turns out, not super highly compensated, just in case you're planning your future career. And so, you know, when you talk about like, what is a resume builder? I mean, I would put it back on some of these colleges and universities to value work, because if you are not valuing work, you are fundamentally being elitist. There's just nothing else to say about it. That's an elitist viewpoint. If you say that a part-time job is not as valuable as volunteering at something, well, here's a newsflash, guys. Not everybody can afford to do unpaid labor all the time. And volunteering is huge and amazing and important, but that is not the reality for a lot of people and a lot of kids. When they're thinking, I need to go to college, they're thinking, I need to make money.
Right. And I think that idea of not valuing what it takes to show up every day at a job that you might not love, that's character building. Totally. I mean, honestly, that's character building. Is I had summer jobs always as well. And showing up, I worked at a pharmacy. I did, you know, I did lots of different jobs. And having to show up to something that's boring and something that you don't want to do, but you show up anyway, that is revelatory about who you are. Yeah. And I just think that, I think that's interesting. I do think that's elitist. If somebody values teenage volunteer work higher than somebody who's working at McDonald's every day through high school, I think there's something that needs to be, and we don't know that this is how things are valued. All we know is parental perception, and parental perception is that those resumes need to be built. I don't know whether that's true or not. I don't know how colleges are looking at those things. I really don't, but it is interesting. And I think and this is something that you're going to have to deal with in the next 2 years, is who does Bernie get to babysit for? How well do you feel you have to interview those parents and that family before you'll allow your daughter into their home?
Yeah.
I mean, there are all sorts of balances on both sides, but the bottom line is I think both of us are better for having done it. And it probably had an influence on how we did our jobs as adults.
It's so true. It is so true. Long live the babysitter. Read those old Babysitter's Club books, guys. Bust those out. You'll be so happy. And you can do it maybe while you're wearing a mask on your face from our presenting sponsor of Best to the Nest, Formwa Climate Smart Skincare. How was that for a segue? You know, master of segues over here, Marjorie. I do love a good book with a mask on my face. And I will tell you, one of my favorite masks to do from Pormois Climate Smart Skincare is the blue light mask. So it's so good. It's jasmine flowers. It's the botanical reversal mask. You put it on and you let it sit. And then you just kind of take a warm washcloth and kind of wipe it off, but leave the residue on and it soaks right into your skin. Pormois Climate Smart Skincare is the only skincare I use. I've used it for 3 years. I am absolutely 100% obsessed. And then I got Marjorie on board a few months ago, and I know that she feels the exact same.
Do I look glowy?
You do. Perfectly glowy. Use the code NEST at pormoiskincare.com and you can save 20% on your order. The code NEST, N-E-S-T, and get your climate smart skincare. It is unlike any other skincare system that you will ever use. And I'm telling you, you'll love it. There's 100% money back guarantee too.
So what was the name of that book that you just, The Babysitter's Club? I never read that series.
Oh, it was a whole series. It was like so great. They actually came out with a show, like a reboot show recently that wasn't super well received and did lead me to have conversations with Bernie about periods that I was not expecting to have once we were watching it. But alas, here we were.
And you can never have those too early, trust me. Well, the reason I bring it up is because at the end of this article, they talk about that book series. I think it came out in the 80s or maybe 90s. And so I sort of missed that.
Christine, Claudia, Marianne, I know all the characters.
But it heightened, it sort of heightened the allure of being a babysitter. And so Netflix brought this back, made it a series. In the article, they talk about how Netflix misstepped because they made the series for teenage girls, but teenage girls don't babysit. So there was no buy-in that they should have hooked into the nostalgia of people your age who were babysitters and made a series for like the 30, 40 somethings who would have had a nostalgic look back at what it meant to be a babysitter. Yeah, I don't know how you do that, but that's why they were saying this, the series failed, is because girls, young girls, the demographic they were shooting for as an audience could care less about babysitting.
It was just totally had no hook. Yeah, Alicia Silverstone was one of the moms in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I like it also felt like a little heavy, and it felt a little bit like, like the criticism of the Sex and the City, just like that, you know, the reboot of the show that came out, which was that it was trying too hard to check off every box and be all things to all people.
To all people.
And that feels forced and artificial to everyone, you know, I mean, and the show, what was interesting is I was like, this is so fascinating that they are, because it was, the book series was actually quite progressive and quite inclusive and diverse at the time. Like it never, when I was reading it, I mean, and even when I look back at like the characters, and it felt like then they tried too hard to just like, I don't just be like, oh, well, we have to make sure that this is included and this is included. And, and it just, then you, when you're trying to tell, when you're trying to be all things to all people, you miss the heart of some of those smaller stories, I think. So that got a little tricky.
It's very hard to do. And I think, but they did try, but I did, I thought it was interesting that they were saying that it just didn't land because it couldn't connect with the 10, 11, 12 year olds who are supposed to be the babysitters. They're not babysitting.
Yeah.
They're not babysitting.
Bernie wasn't into it. She wasn't into it. We watched it. We talked about periods, and alas, now here we are. There you go, Marjorie.
Still, the show, here's what we learned. Here's what's shocking. If you get a babysitter that's not in high school, it could be $25 an hour, which you were saying, and I thought this was very funny, that it makes you think about the people that you're going out with, whether or not they're worth it, including your husband, which is exactly how my mind would work. But then I started thinking, Elizabeth, two couples out, each paying babysitters $25 a night. It's a $500 to $700 night.
You want to add in an Uber, Marjorie? Because if you get a couple cocktails, then you're Ubering. And you have a babysitter who can drive so that you can Uber. And it's very easy to hit a $200 dinner if you're having cocktails.
That's insane. Okay, that's insane. So we learned that. And then we learned if you live in Illinois and you've been leaving your child, and check this data, check this. I'm only going out of the Atlantic article because I still find it incredible that the state of Illinois says you cannot leave a child unattended until they're 14 years old. It is shocking. That's what we learned today, everybody. That's that's a good takeaway.
It is a good takeaway. I love this podcast. This is a great show. It's a great show, Marjorie. If you're enjoying this podcast like we are, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Give us a review at Apple Podcasts.
Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best of the Nest, or go to bestofthenest.com. We are the podcast that brings you home.